morning, everybody. Good morning.
Welcome back.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back. At the bottom of this source sheet, I write, I miss you all, and I'm thrilled to be back. You have no idea. Hotel Ascenti told to the Yellow Kazai. There are a few weeks there. I couldn't move. I thought, I'll never be the same again. Thank God. Oh, boy, am I the same. Where is it go? And, you know, there's 4 weeks' worth of frustration of things going on that upset me, and I have nobody to let it out. But we'll try and, you know, dole it out over the next few weeks. The central source of today's shiur is on that opening page, the left-hand side. We will get to the right-hand side, which is from the Parashat Bishalach. We'll get there, but the central theme is all based on the left-hand side of the page. The left-hand side of the page is, I believe, the first piece of Meshech Chochmah that I ever learned. It goes back about 50 years ago or more. The Meshech Chochmah is known by two names. The Or Sameach, that was the Sefer that he wrote that the Meir Simcha HaKohen, who was the Rav of Divinsk. He was the Gadol Yisrael in the first quarter of the 20th century. He was the giant, the Meir Simcha HaKohen of the city of Dvinsk. He wrote two svarim. One is the Or Sameach on the Rambam, and the other is this Sefer Meshech Chochmah on Chumash. Rabbi Avram Shapira told me on a number of occasions, Rabbi Shapiro was the Rashim of Merkel Zarab, former chief rabbi. He said that the Rabbi Simcha asked his close friends which Sefer should he publish first. He had the Or Sameach ready, which is on Rambam, brilliant, and he had the Meshech Chochmah. So they told him, print the Or Sameach first. Because if you're going to print the Meshech Chochmah, which is on Chumash, so don't think, all right, you know what, another Sefer on Chumash. Understand? But if they'll see what you are, when they learn the Or Sameach, they'll learn the Or Sameach, they'll see that you are a giant in Torah, then they'll have a great deal of respect for everything that you write in the Meshech Chochmah. And in fact, the Meshech Chochmah was ultimately printed posthumously after he died. And there's no question about it that people looked at the Meshech Chochmah in a completely different light, because it was Rav Meir Simcha HaKohen Vince who wrote it. When I came to Neir Yisrael, in Baltimore, I think it was 1953, you know, whenever you come to yeshiva, there are always the legendary stories about the yeshiva, and they pile it all on you. Yeshiva was Rav Yaakov Yitzchak Halevi Ruderman, the Chlenet of Racha. So one of the stories that they told about him is that must have been in the early part of the 20th century, maybe even in the teens, one copy of a new sefer called the Or Sameach arrived in Slobodka. And the Bachman Yeshiva signed up to get a chance to get their hands on the sefer. So of course the great apocryphal story is that the Rashid Meir Yisrael got it for one night. And he stood by a street light in Kovner, and he learned the Or Sameach from cover to cover. Some years later, that was one of my famous stories with flat tire that I got on the New Jersey Turnpike on one of the coldest nights of February, and I didn't know how to change a tire. We both felt sorry for ourselves, and it was getting colder and colder, and then it was terrible. And I go, Benishon, Benishon, you leave me here. And there was nothing around. The gas station, there was nothing. I didn't have a cell phone. I don't even know if they had cell phones. Yeah, there were cell phones, right? I was still resisting it. So there we are. We're forlorn. We're lost. Till finally, I'm already near frostbite, I said, Bela. We're going to change the tire. Go to the glove compartment and get out the instructions. So there it is, we got out the instructions. And there was one street light there. And here it is, I'm reading the instructions on how to change a tire. And I can't figure it out. And I said, imagine that. 60, 70 years ago, my Rosh Yeshiva stood by the street light all night and learned the Or Sameach from beginning to end. And his Talmud is standing there by a streetlight trying to figure out how to change his tire, and he can't do it. But the end was, we did figure out that you can't do anything until you get the jack out. So I went to the back, and I found where the jack was. That was also an accomplishment. And it seems you needed some kind of a wrist motion to be able to extricate the jack from the back. Till I did it. And then finally, we put the jack under the car, and I began to jack up the car. Then you know the rest of the story. They don't remember it, that's great. At that moment, a big truck comes screeching to a halt. And a big African-American comes out toward me and says, Shema Yisrael. And the kindest, softest fellow in the world says, you get a problem, I'm going to help you. And immediately after that, a fire engine red car comes by, screeches for halt. A blonde American WASP says he's an off-duty policeman, and from the other side of the road, he saw that we were having trouble. He went to the next exit, turned around, and the African-American and the WASP changed the tire. But the message was the following. The message was, as long as I felt sorry for myself, nothing was going to happen. In heaven, the Malachim was saying, Rabbeinu, don't you see gold is stuck out there? You're going to let him freeze on the New Jersey Turnpike. No response from Rabbeinu. And then Malachim started jumping. Rabbeinu, he took out the instruction booklet from the glove compartment. No response from the basement. The basement, he got the jack out! The basement, he's jacking up the car. Send the boys in. The message, of course, being you have to do for yourself before the Rabbi Shalom helps you. You can't just sit around and pray. Prayer does not bring salvation or victory. Action does. All right. But the only reason I told the story is because here it is, the first Mashiach Chachma that I learned. And here it is, right, Rav Shimon learned the whole Meshech Chachma during the course of the night by a street lamp in South Africa. I remember it was 3-4 summers ago, we went on a roots tour and we came to South Africa and I told my wife, let's go look for this street lamp. Where did the Rav Shimon learn it? And here it is, I'm trying to read the instruction book and on how it says it. Very, very, very. How the generations have fallen. This Meshech Chachma is of such importance and such significance. And you'll see it's going to be obvious very quickly, and it's brilliant. He makes an observation, and the observation is a brilliant one. Following the observation that he makes, he gives 4 proofs that what he has observed and what he sees to be true is in fact so. And once he's gone through these 2 steps, then he can take us to the Parsha and of all the fascinating things, 2 similar words that appear in the Parsha, one spelled with a vav and one spelled without a vav, and it all becomes so clear. Now that it's totally unclear to you, we're going to begin. On the left-hand side of the page, I'll tell you in each section, I'll tell you in advance what it's about. The observation that the Meshech Chachma makes is the following, that there's an extremely significant difference in Torah between 2 kinds of legislation. There is religious legislation in Torah, and there is social legislation. Religious legislation, Shabbos, Kashrus, Sukkah, Lulav, all of the religious observances. And then there are negative commandments as well. What is prohibited? Chil Shabbos, Chayfus, etc. There is a second set of legislation, and that legislation is social. Machlokes is prohibited, Lashon Hara, Rechilas, libel, slander, all of these are social prohibitions. They eat away at the very fabric of society. Meshech Chachma says there's such a significant difference between these 2 aspects of Torah legislation. With regard to religious provisions, avedas, the Torah tells us punishment. Yei treif, there's a punishment. Person in the chal mishabbos, there's punishment. Somebody eats on Yom Kippur, there's punishment. With regard to machlekes, all of the social prohibitions of Torah, there is no punishment at all that's talked about in Torah. It doesn't say what's going to happen to you if you spoke Lashon Hara. It doesn't say you're going to get whipped, or you're going to get your hands chopped off, Saudi Arabia like. There's no such thing. There's no punishment. But here comes the big but. He says that's only true if we're talking about individuals. When individuals eat treif or machal Shabbos or eat on Yom Kippur, then there is punishment. What happens if Klal Yisrael, unfortunately, Klal Yisrael has reached a point where Shabbos, the masses are not keeping Shabbos. The masses of Jews are not eating kosher. Then a completely different kind of attitude comes into play. We'll see. with regard to the social ills, that we said, there's no punishment at all in Torah. That's only true if it's individuals. But what happens if society becomes corrupt? Oh, then there will be divine punishment. If Klal Yisrael is overwhelmed with machlekes, with lashon hara, with rechilus, slander, all of this, then everything changes completely. Then there's punishment. And we're going to see what a big difference it makes. But let's read a little bit, and then we're going to go through proofs. 1, 2, 3, and 4. Let's read. Where it says the number one, b'hidbonen b'darkei ha-Torah, anybody who thinks and meditates about the ways of Torah, nireh, it seems, ki b'mitzvot shimiyot, mitzvot shimiyot are mitzvahs that we have to hear them from God. We would not be able to arrive at such mitzvahs on ourselves. We have to receive it from God. For example, avodah zarah, v'arayos, idolatry, and sexual immorality. Yesh kodes uskila ushar mitot umalkot. There's a whole array of punishment. There's kodes dying young, stoning, flagellations, being whipped. Lokein b'nimusiot umidot. But we're talking about nimusiot, the way in which people should conduct themselves. And in character and personality, for example, machlokas, lashon hara, rechilus, even gezel, theft. Because by gezel, if one returns it, then there is no, somebody stole and returns it, there's no punishment. Ein bo malchus, there is no whipping. The havel lav hanitzel tashlumin, because stealing is a negative commandment where one has the opportunity to repay. And if you repay, you walk out scot-free. Or the Havalav Shein Vaisa, or many of these prohibitions are negative commandments that don't involve an act. It's a word. A word. Not enough. Ulam. Ah. All of this, he says, that Dafka, B'yachid ha'ozer, all of this is true when we're talking about individuals who are mechal Shabbos or Avodah Zarah. Individuals who are talking lashon hara or are involved in machlokes. Avolim ha'tzibur nishchasin. But if the community has become corrupt, oh boy, there we find precisely the opposite. That on religious transgressions, God is going to be long-suffering. He will be kind. He will wait. As he will say later on, an extremely important sentence. That we know that Klal Yisrael on Chalei Shabbos. Shabbos is lost. It's meaning to so many Jews. So he said, God, he's going to wait. He's going to bring them back. But if they sin, that the community has sunken into is of a social nature, punishment comes and can come swiftly. Now the proofs. Proof number one is, that's represented by the A on the extreme left-hand side. The Talmud Yerushalmi says, Doro shel David kulam tzadikim hayu. The generation of David HaMelech, they were all righteous. Va'yidei shehoyu behem dilaturin, because they were dilaturin, means people who speak evil. There were people who spoke evil. Hoyu noflin bilhama. David went down to war and people fell in war. The second half over here is absolutely unbelievable. The second half is, avol doro shel achol. Ach, the generation of Achav. Achav was a king of Israel who was an idolater. He was on Russia. And of course, simply by mentioning the name of his wife, you already know what he was. Jezebel. Jezebel was his wife. This was a terrible period in Jewish history. Dodo shall Achav, in the generation of Achav, owed every Zohar, who they were idolaters. Because there were no gossip mongers. You know what happened? They went down to war, and he was unbelievably victorious in war. The Russia Melchusha Ahab, you understand? What does he mean that there were those who spoke Lashon Hara in the times of David, and those who didn't in the time of Achav? In the time of David, there was a great man by the name of Doeg. Doeg is the one who spoke about Novgir HaKohanim and accused them of giving weapons to David. And they were totally innocent. They had no idea what was happening. And the entire city showed the story, the whole city of Nov, the city of God. In the days of Achav, Jezebel wanted to wipe out, exterminate all the prophets of Israel. So there was a prophet by the name of Obadiah who took 100 prophets, hid 50 in one cave, 50 in another cave, and he fed them. And he provided for them. You know how he fed them? He was in charge of the house of Achav. Under Achav's nose, his kitchens were providing the food. You know, these kosher wrapped up packages, batatas on them. Everything is coming out of the kitchen of Achav. There are so many people who are involved in this operation saving the prophets. No one whispered a word to Achav. Not a word. I'm afraid I don't want to talk Lashon Hara about our country over here, but there's leaking going on here. Everything is leaking, you know. You need a lot of Dutch boys putting their fingers in the dikes to stop all the leaks. You can be in the middle of a cabinet meeting and already Arutz Shtanyim knows, and Reuters is talking about it in principle. It's unbelievable. Not a word was said. And therefore, what a powerful statement is made by the Gemara. Doro shall David in the generation of David, though they were tzaddikim, they went down to war, and men fell in war because of social sins. Doro shall Achav, when they were Obed and Zarah, but they knew how to maintain dignified, significant silence. Proof number one. So therefore he goes on to say, if the community has become corrupt with idolatry, va'arayas, or immorality, about this it says, a pasuk in Torah, ha'shofein itam betoch tumatam. God dwells with the Jewish people even when they are impure. They can be bad, but his divine presence is with him. Avol b'ni musiot, midot, with manners of conduct and personality, or if that is corrupt, lashon hara, machlokes, about that it says, a pasuk in Tehillim, Roma al hashamayim. God ascends heavenward. He can't stand it here. When Jews are torn apart from within, with machlekes and lashon hara, he ascends heavenward. This is an extension of this Gemara. It's a Talmud who shown in the Sefer Torah. Further, the next proof number two is going to be the greatest one. You know, you should have been able to say this one yourself. He's going to bring the famous Gemara in the Sefer Yuma. The Gemara says, why was the first Beit HaMikdash destroyed? Because Jews had transgress the three cardinal sins, Gindarayas, Abidazarashif, Sonim, idolatry, immorality, murder. By Cheney, the second Beit HaMikdash, the second Commonwealth, though they were tzaddikim, why was it destroyed? So the Gemara says, because of sinas chinam. Now the Gemara asks, which one is worse? So the Gemara gives the obvious answer. Take a look at the Beit HaMikdash. It was returned to the first, but not yet returned to the second. Which means the period of the first Beit HaMikdash, where they transgressed the three cardinal sins, was nowhere as bad as the second Beit HaMikdash, where there was Sinat Kinam. What a powerful proof to what the Meshech Chacham is saying. Ugedol Mizu, Ugedol Mizu, greater than this, Midrash Nishayim, first Beit HaMikdash, they were Odeh V'Nizodeh, and Arganis and Shizl Zdamim. Midrash Sheini, how you ask him about turn of the mitzvahs. Ugedol Mizu, my, they were very, very pious. Why was it destroyed? They sin us to them because of faceless hatred. Lametcha sheshkula sin us to them keneged sholish aveiros avedizodik to the arad and shulah. Okay. B'sham zeh the Gemara asks, which is worse? The Gemara says, take a look at the Beit HaMikdash. Shechazro l'mishonim, it returned to the first to the chazal akredim. Hadei. What do we see from this? If the tzibur has become corrupt in their conduct between one another, it's much worse. It's worse than if they are corrupt in their lack of fulfillment of mitzvahs. This is an awesome statement that he's making. Awesome statement that it's making.
I'm
really a good guy, but here it is, I'm talking to a fellow who I thought was a very fine fellow. I like the guy. I don't think I like him too much anymore. But anyway, I asked him to tell me somebody had written in her note following the note tragedy that you should know, Allah Nishkach, don't forget for a moment that we are living in the depths of Dallas. Alright?
Oh, yeah.
So I asked them, are we living in the depths of Dallas? So I would have thought he'd say, no, what are you talking about? What are you talking about now? What? This is not the depths of Dallas? The Prime Minister's in the Chol Shabbos. He said it to me no less than five times. And I'm thinking to myself, the Meshech Chochmah. Meshech Chochmah, we'll see soon. When Jews may be sinning in matters of religion, and that the Torah says, Hashochen Yitom Betov Tumatam, God dwells amongst them though they are impure. We will yet talk in the coming weeks about an awesome medrash in Eicha that needs a great deal of elaboration, it's worthwhile knowing. But God says, Halavai, if only my people would sin, but be with me in Eretz Yisrael, that would be good. They! The Rebbeinu says, I'd rather have mine a kindle up here in Eretz Yisrael, even if they do sinners. We will explain that, don't worry about that. You don't have to wait for that. Right, let's keep going over here. There's a third proof Parashat Noach. There are two generations described in Parashat Noach. There's the Dor HaMabul, the generation of the flood at the beginning of the Sefer. And there's the Dor HaPlug at the end of the Sefer. Those who wanted to build that Tower of Babel, it was an act of rebellion against God. The generation of the Babel were wiped out. The generation of the rebellious ones against God, no, God spread them out around the world. Let them build up the world. What was the difference? So the Gemara says, Gotel HaShalom, greatest peace. If there's peace between people, even if they sin, God can handle it. That's okay. But if they have become corrupt, and the Gemara says, what finally sealed the fate of the generation of the Mabul? Lo nechtam gzardinom elo al hagezel. Their final decree was, because they were thieves, they robbed for one another. What a classic proof that when we're talking about social, a community that has become socially corrupt, they're in grave danger. But those who rebel against God and build that great tower of Babel, they live together in peace. Very important. Very important. By the way, it becomes even more important when Nebuchadnezzar, we have to go through a period of elections, because the awesome amount of terrible things that are said and that are written. There's only Zindigin mitzvahed, it causes me a tremendous amount of pain. And it was worse. So for the last 4 weeks I had to sit at home and suffer the pain myself and not inflict it on you. Right. So I get sick. And not only that, a lot of the talk is causing serious harm to the Jewish people.
The other countries?
People say terribly irresponsible things. There was an editorial in the Jerusalem Post a few days ago about Yoav Galant, who was a candidate to be the Ramakal after Israel's attack in Syria, where they did a job on a whole bunch of generals over there, and said, oh, Netanyahu did it for political purposes. He's running. God Almighty, what a terrible thing. He's been trying to backtrack on it now. No, I didn't mean it, they didn't understand me. It was taken out of context. We know all of these things. The harm that it did globally was a man opens up his mouth and says something terrible. In other words, during election time, the Prime Minister has absolutely no responsibility to be concerned about the safety of the Jewish people. Because anything he's going to do, hey, that's electioneering, you understand? You can't do that. You have to be responsible. Listen, you're my generation, you understand? I was raised in Williamsburg on loose lips, St. Schiff's. You didn't talk during the Second World War about, in Williamsburg, we were right there by the Navy Yard. We knew when boats were coming in, when boats were leaving, what should I do? Big pictures of Uncle Sam. Loose lips, sink ships. Is that true? Is that true? So we have three proofs already. Three proofs. Now if you go from that number C, I have underlined V'lachein al-chibu shabbos b'abemiseinu harabim shenispashet ya'achel lehem kiyem tzibur. V'av b'abegezora amru b'sifri v'hanefesh v'nifasa shena tzibur l'chotu. He says, l'chein, with regard to chibu shabbos, which unfortunately has spread out amongst the Jewish people, there's a lot of Kol Shabbos. God is compassionate. Oy. But if they fall into the trap of Machlekes and Lashon Hara, an extremely significant statement that the Meshech Chochma is making that has to become part of the way we look at things. Can't walk around saying, you know what, he's a Russia. Lachal Shabbos. He's an Eichel Pfeifus. The speaking may be worse than the Chul Shabbos. The creating a rift within the Jewish people, that's worse. I don't know if they'll like me in Harnof after this, but this is the Meshech Chochma, this is the Holy Smile. And we will yet talk about Gedolei HaChassidus and Gedolei HaKabbalah, and then Gedolei HaLocha. How do you deal? How are we supposed to look at people who are not Shomer Torah U'Mitzvos? Do they have a halacha of being Re'acha, your friend, your brother, that you must love? Those the mitzvah of a haftol or reyachol kamocha apply to them? Oh boy, you'll find out it certainly does. It's a completely different way of looking at things. The what seems to be in quotation marks fruer way to look at things may be the frier way to look at things. All right. I'm going to take down to the bottom of the page. Here's the fourth proof. This one I have learned with you in the past. Number four. This appears not only here in Parshat Peshawar, but this also appears in a famous letter that was written by Rav Meir Simcha in 1922. I believe it was after the San Remo conference. That was the conference at which the League of Nations voted that Palestine should be given as a mandate to Britain to prepare it to be a home for the Jewish people. Meshech Chochma wrote, what a letter that was, what a letter. I remember about that letter also, a great statement from Avraham Shapira. The letter says, now that the nations of the world have given their approval that Eretz Yisrael should be to Klal Yisrael, three words he writes, Sor Pachad HaShavuos, the fear of the oaths is removed. Satmar and others are all based their negative shita on the idea that there are three oaths that God administered, so to speak, to the Jewish people. One of them is that they should not go up on Mars Paris, so therefore you're not allowed to go, you're not allowed to be, you're not allowed to, the whole thing, the Medina is tight, and it's a Usa, it's a personal and so good. But here along comes the Meshach Hoffman says, once permission was granted by the nations of the world, incidentally not only by the League of Nations, but then miracle of miracles by the United Nations, which it was unbelievable. Anyway, Sor Pachav HaShuos, the fear of the Shuos is over. So Avraham Shapira said, the moment that a Gadol B'Yisrael like Rav Meir Simcha made that statement, the entire debate should have come to an end once and for all. But it didn't. So what did he write in that letter? The next paragraph, the bottom paragraph, appears also in his letter then. The Jewish people committed two terrible sins in the desert. The sin of the Egel and the sin of the Meraglim. The sin of the Egel was an assault on God, idolatry. And he forgave them the sin of the Egel. After the Egel, he tells them, build a Mishnah. The sin of the Meraglim, Lashon Hara, and he calls it not only Lashon Hara, but worse, Shviyut Tova, ungrateful. The Rebbeinu is giving you Eretz Yisrael, you're not grateful. Or how much worse it is to already be in Eretz Yisrael and be ungrateful for God's gift to us. Heavens. So he says, take a look, here it is. Chetha Egel, God forgave them. Chetha Meraglim, no. Ba'midbar Hazeh, Yitlu B'Rechem. Here in this desert, you're all going to die. Alright, so now we know the Meshach Chachma. Okay? Now he says the following. I just want to point out to you now on the right-hand side of the page, two sukkim. Really the first one that's on the line and the second one. The first one that's on the line says, Vayogo b'nei Yisrael v'toch ha'inam. The children of Israel came into the sea by Yabasha on dry land, v'hamayim lehem chola miminam u'mislolam. And the sea was a wall on their right and on their left. Go down toward the bottom, u'bnei Yisrael hofu by Yabasha v'toch ha'yam, v'hamayim lehem chola miminam. Umishmalam, same term, and the water was a wall, a protective wall from their right and to their left. There's one difference here. Choma in the first pasuk is written with a vav, chet vav mem hey. Choma in the second pasuk is written chet mem hey without the vav. Choma without a vav can be read as Shema, anger, not turn over. To understand the significance of it, I have learned a little message from here. We're not number three, not number four, not even the beginning of number five, the second half of number five. I'm going to write the message for you, I tell you. If the Medrash would have been written in 2015, it could not have been more up to date than it is, though it was written 2,000 years ago or more. Doharacha, v'hamayim lehem choma. Listen to this. The second half, where it's all on the line, v'hamayim lehem choma, the water was a wall. Sheyorad Samuel, listen to this. Samuel came down. Samuel is a bad malach, a bad angel. And if you want to get a better feeling of what it is, I sometimes like to read it small. The left came down. And, yeah. But Amalek found out, now listen to this. This is a malach. Listen to what the Malach is saying. The lives of the Jewish people are hanging in the balance. The Egyptians are pursuing them into the sea. So what does this great Malach come to say to God? Amalek Amalek, he said before him, the Beishul Elam, Lo Ovdu Yisroel Abedazor of Mitzrayim, Israel didn't serve idols in Egypt? You're going to do miracles for them? Jews are about to be saved by God. And here comes someone and says, what are you talking about? There are a bunch of Mechal and Shabbos and they eat Tchaitlis and they eat Hetha Mechira. Who knows what else they're doing? And you're going to go save them? You know, that's the kind of Malachim we need. That's what we need. For your Mashmiach Kolo L'Sar Seigam. Now you understand? this guy is bad news. It's not only that he speaks before God, but he also tells the press and everybody else. These Jews are unworthy. They're a bunch of Bedesara. They are unworthy of being saved. Miracles. So he let the Sar Shayam, the Malach of the Yam, hear about this. And the Sar of the Yam, I imagine he represents the masses of idiots in the world. The moment the Sar of the Yam hears this, he gets angry at the Jewish people, and he wants to drown them in the water. And he became angry with them, and he wanted to drown them. Immediately the Rebbeinu says, I understood. Shaiti Shabaila, you miserable fool. V'chiladatam abduah, when Jews worshipped idols in this time, they did it because they wanted it. V'halolo abduah, mitoch shivu, mitoch tiruv daat, they did it because they were downtrodden and enslaved. They were confused. And you are going to judge a person who is a shogay, not intentional, and one who does things for honest. You're going to consider him as though he's doing something intentionally? How can you be such an idiot? Shogay Kamoilam! Kivin Shishoma Sar Shayam. The Sar Shayam is, you know, he doesn't have a mind of his own. Whichever way Samuel talks to him, so he follows Samuel. The Rebbeinu gets upset, shakes it. You know what he did? Immediately, when the Sar Shayam heard this, Osachem was out of anger of God. That God became angry with him about Israel. So you know what he did? Instead of the waters drowning the Jewish people, they went on to Egypt. Shenema v'yashuvu hamayim. The waters turned. Sheshavu miYisrael al Mitzrayim. The waters that the Sar Shayam was going to pour upon the Jewish people and destroy them went back and destroyed the Egyptians. You know what you have in this medrash? In this medrash you have, and I have a shtick Alan Dershowitz over here. I'll tell you what it's all about. Samuel is talking about moral equivalency. How old are they, every desire? That's how the Gemara describes what Samuel said. What are you talking about? The Egyptians are idolaters, the Jews are idolaters. You understand? Israel kills Palestinians, and poor Palestinians have to fight back. Is there a difference between the two? Shaykh the Shabbat was a difference. They rain thousands of rockets down upon us, and they use civilians as human shields. Atodon, you are going to judge the two of them equally? What are you talking about? There's a difference between Tzadik and Rasha. There's a difference between the innocent and the guilty. Dershowitz is talking about the fact that the international court is going to judge Israel. So he says, unbelievable. This is a moral equivalency of the worst order. I was learning the medrash, and then I couldn't help it, you know. But Dershowitz was about to hang, but they're not Dershowitz. He's talking about bringing Israel before the court. And it is a weapon because it seeks to create a false moral equivalence between a vibrant democracy that is governed by the rule of law and the loose assortment of groups, Fatah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and others that do not accept the results of elections, that murder dissenters with no sense of due process, and that allowed their official media organs to incite violence against civilians based on their religion. It also seeks to create a false moral equivalence between an army that seeks to defend its civilians from rocket attacks, suicide bombers, and terror tunnels, and a terrorist group that murders civilians in their beds, kidnaps and kills children, and targets civilians from behind human shields. Moral equivalency. Come all the way down to Israel, somehow. These are idolaters, the Jewish people are idolaters, and the Egyptians are idolaters. None of the letters could have been written today. The only thing you can say to somebody of this sort is, and the Rebbe very rarely in Medrash uses such terminology, Shaiti Shevayim. Sometimes you can't talk sense to some people. You just have to tell them straight out. You're absurd. You're an idiot. You are creating the equivalency that doesn't exist. These are showmen, these are mazes, these are owners, and these are gossam. These are unintentional, and these are intentional. These are killers, and these are defenders. These are protectors, and those are murderers. But you're going to hold the defender and the protector, you're going to hold him before the court of war. Show me your mind. The world is going to start raining men. Shaitim Shevaylon. So therefore the Meshech Chochma ends with this medrash. I'm not creating the medrash or bringing the medrash here. He says that effort took place over there. But why was there a moment at which there was anger against the Jewish people? This is the final point he makes. At one point, Samuel seems to be have the upper hand. The sea is ready to destroy the Jewish people until God stops it. Because there was one thing that happened that night on the beach. You know what happened that night on the beach? Here they are, the Jewish people are caught in the worst vice that they ever were caught. The Egyptians on one side, the dark, ominous sea on the other, and on the Dunkirkian beach, there sit the Jewish people. And the Gemara says, you know what happens on the beach? Jews started arguing with one another. They became four groups. There were those who said, let's throw ourselves into the sea and commit suicide. There are those who said, let us go back to Egypt. There were those who said, let's scream and make noise. And then there was a fourth group that said, this is it, Masada, we're going to fight. All of a sudden, the unity of the Jewish people has fallen apart on the beach. Now they're vulnerable, because when they are torn apart by machlokes from within, that's the worst. So therefore there was the moment at which they could have been destroyed because of that. But no. God is the one who puts an end to it. And the chema, the anger of Samuel in the sea, becomes the source of God's rescue of the Jewish people. Because they're not the same as the Egyptians. They are radically different than the Egyptians. They are the victims. You don't hold victims to be convicted before a court. I don't want to end with at least the first half of that message. This is not brought by the Meshech Chochma, but you know, we got to end on a The number is pretty good that we ended on anyway. The Rishon rescues the Jewish people. The general idea of the Neshach Chochma, brilliant. It means, therefore, that if you have two Jews standing before you, one is a Shemesh Shabbos, a Fumayit, but a Baal Loshin Ahava, hasn't opened up a Shemesh Loshin in his life. And next to him is a Jew who's in the Chol Shabbos, and he may even eat treif. You'd ask the Neshach Chochma, which one of the two is better? Pretty difficult, huh? The Neshach Chochma would tell you that the Jew who speaks Lashon Hara is more destructive of Klal Yisrael than the one who's Mechal Shabbos. Would that go well in her health? Thank God. Thank God that the Baal Neshach Chochma wrote the Or Sameach first. This is the way God of Israel takes a look at that. We should never lose sight of something else. Never, ever lose sight of it. Jews have been left. Shmiras Torah Mitzvahs is the sum total of 2,000 years living amongst the Goyim. The Golos had a terrible effect on us. And despite that, we retained our identity while every other people lost theirs. The Mechal Shabbos would most probably give his life for Klal Yisrael. Don't look down at any Mechal Shabbos. If the moment comes that he's called to the front, he may be there. He will be there. It's a whole different way of looking at it. Klal Yisrael that has abandoned Torah Mitzvahs, this is clearly the result of 3,000 years of Tzavos Shem Kamal. But in the final analysis, so I'll give you a little homework, you should do it. Read today's editorial in the Jerusalem Post. Despite all the anti-Semitism in the world that's going on. But you know what? There's an Eretz Yisrael. And that makes all the difference. Anti-Semitism for 2,000 years, Jews didn't have a choice. Today, they have a choice. With a choice. That makes all the difference in the world. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Shlomo, Jews are not so good, but the truth is they're very good. I believe they're all very good. Mechal Shabbos, it's all right, Satan. Okay, you know who we blame for Mechal Shabbos? For Baal Shabbos, you left us too long at the Golos, you understand? You owe us one. But we have to look at every Jew to make a sense of his great worth and to realize that the disruption of socializing finds over the machlokes and Lashon Hara is far more devastating than anything else. Because then already, so there you have it, you have the four proofs. Doru Shal David and Doru Shal Achav. Migdash Rishon, Migdash Sheni. Dor HaMabul, Dor HaPlaga. Chet HaEdel and Chet HaMerah. Okay. I'm going to go to the next one.